From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, our weekly conversation with BlackAgendaReport.com columnist Margaret Kimberly about this week's Freedom Rider column that takes a look at the legacy of the Obama administration policy towards Africa and what it's meant for the people of that continent. So this week, Obama and Clinton brought slavery to Libya. That's a literal statement.
Yes, it is. And it's the absolute truth. It's easily provable. In 2011, the Obama administration, along with NATO and Gulf monarch states in the Middle East, conspired to destroy the Libyan government and destroy Libya as a society in the process. And that is part of a now 20-year-long plan. It was called the Project for a New American Century. And one of the most important tenets of that plan is the destruction of secular Arab governments. And it's started with Saddam Hussein. Then they moved to Gaddafi. They've been trying to dislodge Assad and have not succeeded, thank goodness. But in 2011, this plan was cooked up to get rid of Gaddafi. It was used under the cover of humanitarian intervention. There were stories told about Gaddafi was planning a massacre. And Human Rights Watch, we talked about them before, these phony human rights organizations who actually just do the bidding of imperialism, helped to spread these stories. The International Criminal Court spread stories about Gaddafi giving his soldiers Viagra so they could rape more easily. I mean, it was horrible. And the goal, and it succeeded, was to get public support for overthrowing his government, which they succeeded in doing. There was a resolution before the UN Security Council approving a no-fly zone, and the only one with planes was Gaddafi, so that meant Gaddafi's Libya had no protection. And to their eternal shame, China and Russia abstained. They could have vetoed it and helped to save him. And the end result was what we saw on television, the gruesome murder of Muammar Gaddafi and the destruction of that country. And since 2011, things have gone from bad to worse. Libya is a failed state. There are various fiefdoms run by local groups and jihadists, and that's the other thing. This was also a pattern of practice of using jihadists to do America's dirty work. The same people who are always vilified until they're found useful by our government. And right away, from the very beginning, darker-skinned Libyans and African migrants were targeted. Whole towns were destroyed. The city of Tawarga, mostly black town, was just reduced to rubble. And that has been going on since. The refugee crisis, migrants from many different places use Libya as the point of embarkation. And in that process, many of these people have been, according to good sources, are being enslaved in Libya. And it's all because of Barack Obama, who was president at the time, and his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton.
You know, at Barr, particularly, people have been talking for years about Obama being the more effective evil, the Democrats being the more effective evil, when you talk about the lesser of two evils, which is the choice that American politics seems to offer, almost consensus across the country that that's the case. Not everyone agrees that it's a bad thing, although I don't understand that position, but that's where we are. Here's what happens in Libya, for example, and Africa, by larger implication. In 2010, Libya is essentially becoming an engine for African unity. with the gold dinar on its way to becoming a currency for Africa, with Libya investing in infrastructure, beginning to do heavily across the continent, calling for politically African unity in the United States of Africa, proclaiming the sovereignty of Africa. At the time, George Bush establishes in October of 2008, AFRICOM, the African Command for the U.S. military, but it is so far removed politically from being actualized that it is based in Stuttgart, Germany, and doesn't have a base on the continent. We fast forward through the machinations at the UN Security Council that resulted in resolutions 1970 and 1973 in February of 2011, which include the no-fly zone that you referred to. You have a condition where Barack Obama himself is claiming that Gaddafi has hired African mercenaries that are killing Libyans, and this sets off a series of lynchings of black Libyans in eastern Libya, spearheaded by the al-Qaeda forces that had come into the country, but that involved even some Libyans of Arab descent, creating chaos throughout the society, polarizing relations between sub-Saharan Africans and North Africans. The situation descends to a point where, rather than Libya being an engine for African unity and sovereignty, is a failed state where slavery exists again.
Exactly. And the first black president brought slavery to this once prosperous country. And it astounds me when I think about the enormity of that crime and the repercussions of Libya being destroyed. Once their army was defeated, there were weapons caches in various places in Libya, and they were just snatched up by the groups overthrowing Gaddafi. Some of those weapons made it to Boko Haram and made it to jihadists in Mali. So the chaos and violence spread to other countries. Migrants leaving Libya, drowning in the Mediterranean Sea. Thousands of people have died. Some of them do make it to Europe, only to live in refugee camps where they are hoping to get into Europe at some point. And some of the blowback ended up killing the American ambassador, who was killed in Benghazi, which the Republicans made so much hay about. But that was the result of policies which the Republicans backed as well. So the American ambassador ended up being killed by his own government, in effect.
Right.
And the fact that the United States is responsible entirely for the refugee crisis, people leaving Libya and Syria, and it is never described that way. There's all, talk of the impact on European politics and yes, of course, you can discuss that. But no one in the corporate media ever says, and by the way, people would not be leaving Syria and Libya in desperation had it not been for the United States. And you're correct about Libya's role in Africa. Libya was an oil-producing nation. Since that time, of course, the United States connived to drive down the price of oil in order to hurt Russia, to hurt Venezuela and other countries. Some of the Gulf states ended up hurting themselves in the process. But at any rate, that's another story. But Gaddafi was always, even though there's often this separation made between North Africa and sub-Saharan Africa, he was an African leader, and he was very active in the Organization for African Unity. And but he was taken out as part of this larger plan. And there's this video, just remembering it, of I believe it was a meeting of the Arab League, where he said, he's talking about Saddam Hussein, about Iraq being destroyed. And he said, we could all be next. And Assad is sitting there and he sort of chuckles. It's not clear why he's chuckling, but it's pretty eerie now. And Hillary Clinton, one of the reasons I dislike her so intensely, was not only apparently by all reports, she was the driver behind this. Of course, Obama's responsible. He was her boss, so he could not have objected. But she was insisting that this could be done successfully. And then she even laughed about it. We came, we saw he died. Yeah. And about the murder of Gaddafi specifically. But this is a sad tale about the United States' role in the world as one of just destroying. Anyone who cannot be controlled is taken out. Anyone who won't do what the United States demands can be taken out. And it could be a leader. It could be a whole country. The repercussions of what happens later, they don't care. Well, they know what the repercussions are. I mean, obviously, it's mass death, chaos, violence. And but they don't care. And it's swept under the rug. And, you know, and the other thing is, listeners may recall that Ronald Reagan tried to kill Gaddafi back in the 80s. Right. And sent him, bombed his house, killed one of his kids, but he survived. But then they gave up. But the one who got the deed done was a Democrat. And it's just another example of Democrats making Republican dreams come true.
And misleaders, because he was America's first black president that accomplished that.
Yes, and everybody, and it's very shameful. If anybody defended Gaddafi, black people did. Black people had before Obama, actually before Colin Powell, before there were black faces in these high places of foreign policy decisions. We were always outliers in American public opinion on foreign policy. Our own experience here, our feelings of solidarity for people of color around the world, we were always skeptical. At the very least, and in many cases, in opposition to American foreign policy. And we said so quite openly. If nobody else liked Fidel Castro, black Americans liked Fidel Castro, as an example. And we defended Gaddafi until he was in the crosshairs of the first black president. And then there was silence.
Mm. And, you know, it's... if you look at the real irony of it, Obama was not a typical African American with, you know, mostly folks have been here longer than just about anybody but the indigenous people here.
Yes.
For, you know, 6, 7, 8 generations going back or longer. His father was born in Africa. And
yes.
And so he, you know, he's a son of Africa directly. And the condition that he left at the end of the day, which I neglected to mention, was that rather than AFRICOM being banished to Stuttgart, it now sits in command and control of the militaries of 35 African countries and counting.
Yes, absolutely. There was last week there was, you know, they made a big story about Donald Trump sending troops to Somalia. And I was like, well, that's not new. And it turned out to be 25 soldiers or something. But the control of African militaries is something that started under Obama. It was part of the imperial project, and it's been an absolute disaster. For African people, Africa has completely lost its independence. There are a handful of countries that are independent of the United States control, and those countries are always under threat, like Eritrea. And we're always told that Eritrea is a horror story, and everybody wants to leave, and they just want to be independent. And another thing, because of that, Eritreans are put at the top on the refugee list. So an Eritrean can automatically be admitted to a country as a refugee. So you have to be careful when we hear about how many people are fleeing Eritrea. A lot of those people are not Eritreans. They are Ethiopians or Somalians. They're from some other country, and they say they're Eritrean so they can get in. So, but that's how the United States and other nations treat African countries who try to be independent. If you agree to be a fiefdom, if you agree to be controlled by AFRICOM, everything is fine. If you dare to be independent, you can literally be taken out.
This is, you know, goes back quite a ways. The U.S. Navy, for example, was set up actually to deal with what wasn't called Libya then, but Libya, the shores of Tripoli, literally. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. at the time refused to pay taxes or fees for moving materials out of North Africa to the local governments there. They considered it tribute, and the Navy was sent, was created and sent to, to essentially guarantee that American merchant ships could walk off with whatever they wanted to from the points at that time in what was Tripolitania and what's now Libya, and this has essentially been reestablished, apparently with the reestablishment of actual human slavery.
Well, I didn't know that history of the Navy, Don. That I did not realize, but it's just beyond sad to know that first of all, that African countries are in such a state of failure that there are so many people who see no future other than to leave those countries, and despite the dangers, risk death in crossing the Mediterranean. Some people are kidnapped, are forced to pay more. You know, these are human traffickers, right, who are paid to take people out of Libya. Some take the money, some extort people, some are selling them into slavery, into sex slavery. These rickety boats or these dinghies that people are on to, in hopes of getting to Europe, getting to Italy. People are many of them balk when they see the dangers that they face, but they're forced to go on, or money is extorted from them, or they're from their families. It's quite awful, and there hasn't been enough discussion about it. I mean, these stories have just emerged recently about people literally being sold in markets in Libya, and these migrants from other countries being imprisoned, or they're being held for ransom. Their families are told to pay more money. It's quite terrible, but it's all because of the United States, and that is the most important thing to remember about any of this, that the first black president succeeded in doing this to this once stable and prosperous country. And when the United States does these things, it has, as I pointed out earlier, the ripple effects. When Gaddafi was still alive, of course, people, wanted to use Libya. It's close to Europe, but he did not allow that to happen. There were immigration controls, and he also, African migrants went to Libya to work. And Libya provided a haven and provided employment for people. And now it's just a ruin, and it's just a place to get through in hopes of getting into some squalid refugee camp in Europe, which wouldn't exist without the United States. So, yeah. So here we are.
Yeah. And I mean, this is so discouraging. The stirrings of independence that have, manifest themselves repeatedly over the history of colonialism in Africa, whether in the 19th century, the 20th century, Bandung, Congo, all these different points in time when people start to rise up. The most brutal repression by the West, led by the United States, sometimes fronted by countries such as Belgium in the early 60s, or France as a part of this Obama administration attack on Africa. looking now at Congo, you know, some 57 years after, or 50 some odd years after the murder of Patrice Lumumba, for example, there are still millions of people in precarious state, millions of deaths over the last decade or two, and not, this is not atypical. There are so many parts of the continent that are in constant warfare, whether it's in places like Nigeria that are not nominally at war, but you have Boko Haram and all kinds of stuff going on like that, to the Great Lakes countries, to what's happening in Somalia, Sudan and South Sudan, and just everywhere. And the United States is behind all of it. The weapons aren't manufactured in the main on the continent. They come from elsewhere. And the funding of all of these insurgencies, likewise, mostly comes from off the continent, Europe and the United States in particular.
Well, yeah, you may recall in 2011 when they Gaddafi was dead and Libya was destroyed, that the Prime Minister of the UK of at the time, David Cameron, and the then President of France, Sarkozy, showed up in person to gloat over their destruction. Hillary Clinton went in person. So that was very obvious that they went there in person to give them more money and to congratulate themselves and their co-conspirators. But other places you mentioned, Congo, Rwanda, all these places are mineral rich, and that can be a curse under a capitalist system, that multinational corporations can end up controlling these places, buying leaders off. Africa has diamonds, gold. Africa has every mineral, although the people don't benefit from it. The coltan, the material that's used in all our electronic devices, is just found in the dirt in Central Africa. Anybody with a shovel and a bucket can, you know, dig up mud and get coltan. Or diamonds, which are not rare, by the way. There's nothing rare about diamonds. There are many places in Africa where they're all over. But they don't benefit the people. And, Congo has this curse of having all these minerals. So for years, Lumumba was overthrown to make sure that the West had easy access. And I'm blanking on his name, the man who ran the Congo for Mobutu. I almost forgot Mobutu, who, and of course they made sure he got rich. He ended up dying in Belgium. The colonizing country, the first horrible genocide of the 20th century happened in Congo from when it was run by Belgium. That sadly is the story of Africa. And Africa would be allowed to develop. These states don't have to be failed, but they would have to be left alone. They would have to be allowed to develop on their own without interference from anybody else, without a profit motive involving the rest of the world. The most stable states, ironically, are those that don't have mineral wealth, that don't have oil or gold or diamonds. So that is the state of Africa. But I think it's important for people to know the role the rest of the world has played in so much of this destruction.
And for people that are interested particularly in some of Congo's history with the Belgians and King Leopold and all that, the documentary White King, Red Rubber, Black Death is certainly worth looking up. You can see it for free on YouTube.
So it's something that hasn't been, there are only like one or two books. It's interesting, this horrible genocide. And there's, I don't know how many thousands of books about the Hitler's genocides, but there's hardly anything about the Congo. And it's very sad.
It's hard to prioritize these things, massive death, murder. But if you're going to go by body count.
Yes.
The Holocaust, as it's called in Europe, the murder by Hitler of 6 million Jews and, by the way, 20-some-odd million Russians and Ukrainians, etc. pales to the murder that was committed by this dinky little Belgian country in Africa. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it's still going on. You know, there have been 6 million deaths in the Congo in the past decade or so. But these people, Uganda and Rwanda, have been in the pay of European powers and of the United States, and it's quite horrible. And it's horrible that it gets so little attention, and it's something, if people are interested in it, we cover quite frequently in Black Agenda Report.
Yeah. Finally, you know, we have this condition prevailing in Africa now: chaos, war, extreme poverty in many places, and certainly extreme inequality, and almost a state of occupation at this point by the U.S. military, certainly an occupation of the command and control structures of the local militaries. There's some stirrings. You have some free spaces, first of all, Zimbabwe mm-hmm. is notably one, and we have others, and yet some stirrings now in South Africa, where Zuma, who also, to his shame, abstained in the resolutions against Libya, with Gaddafi having played such, and the Libyan people having played such a major role in helping South Africa to shake off apartheid. They sat on their hands. Zuma's people sat on their hands during the vote on the resolutions for Libya back in 2011. But now we're looking at Zuma actually talking about and moving to complete what was started back in the 1990s, and that is to start seizing parts of the economy for the people.
Well, that's, you know, that would be a wonderful thing. You know, apartheid was not just about racial discrimination. It was about the theft of South Africa's resources, and it did not change enough, especially of the land. Zimbabwe is vilified for its land redistribution program,
right.
But it was very successful. And people in South Africa want and need the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear about this. The racial discrimination was the means. The theft of the land was the end.
Exactly.
And that stayed situated and in place in most of Africa in the post-colonial period. Still does.
Yes, it does. And I know when they had Nelson Mandela's funeral, and we leaders came from all over the world, and Mugabe got, as I recall, more applause than anybody else,
right.
Which clearly shows what people in South Africa want. They would like to see the same thing there. And the mineral wealth in South Africa, that's how South Africa became this European settler state. But you had striking miners shot down and killed by the post-apartheid government. So the South African true majority rule and true independence has not yet come to be, but we can hope for that. And hopefully we're seeing the beginnings of that happening.
And I'd like to, I guess, ask just very quickly, what is it that people here can be doing or should be doing to help move the process along there?
Well, I think the most important thing is for people to realize the United States, there's a commercial, I think it's for the Navy recruitment. You know, the U.S. Navy, a force for good. And that's never true about the U.S. Interventions. I think the first thing for people to know is that U.S. interventions, U.S. involvement is always a bad thing. It does not benefit anybody anywhere in the world. So I think that is a start. And we have to start demanding that the United States leave other countries alone and the rest of the world. And we have to be on the side of independence and sovereignty for people everywhere. And that means rejecting the major political parties here. Libya was destroyed by Democrats. And Democrats and Republicans alike will do the same thing. So it's part of a larger discussion about our own political development and what we should be demanding from our leaders.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com under the banner Freedom Rider. This week's column, Obama and Clinton brought slavery to Libya. Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.